Welcome to another episode of The Corner Booth, the official podcast of RestaurantOwner.com. Today, the restaurant industry is changing faster than ever. Learn from successful independent restaurant operators and other industry leaders as they share best practices that will help you engage your team, delight your guests, and grow your business.
And welcome, everyone, to another episode of Corner Booth. I'm Chris Tripoli with RestaurantOwner.com. And believe it or not, today I'm taking you all the way across the Pacific to Hawaii, where you're going to meet a very, very interesting entrepreneur who, along with his family, a quite large family, started a burger concept that is now growing into the mainland. Welcome to Corner Booth, Seek Hanneman. And let's talk about Seven Brothers Burgers. Seek, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much. Happy to be here.
Most of our listeners are independent operators of a wide variety of concepts. Some have been in the business a while. Some are just getting started. All like to learn from each other. Maybe we could start by you telling them a little bit about how you got started in the business, what interested you at first, so that we know kind of how you got to where you are now.
Sure. Yeah. So we started the business about 14 years ago. My mom and dad are the ones that actually initially started it. I don't think any of our brothers, except for our two little ones, had any idea that they would be involved in it. Right. And so my two brothers at the time were younger. They were in high school. And so my mom and dad were literally pulling them from school to kind of get the business going. And it was actually a pretty incredible thing because it was, if anyone's been to Kahuku, I mean, it's a pretty small town. We took over the restaurant called Kahuku Grill, and it was a little hole in the wall, nothing really. And so, I mean, as us brothers that weren't involved started to see it grow and seeing what my mom and dad were doing and seeing the traction behind it, we're like, oh, this is kind of cool. You know, this is pretty neat. And so one by one, it started us just helping out, you know, just like, hey, we'll cover this shift. We'll make some burgers and try to get through the rushes. But then one by one, we each started to create a little passion for it. We fell in love with the concept of service and, you know, being a part of the service industry and serving people. And not only that, but then also being a part of the food industry, you know, being able to make something that people enjoy and love, and you get an immediate reaction of the product that you're producing, which is pretty cool as well. But yeah, I'd say how we all got involved was mom and dad. You know, they were kind of the ones that kind of started it, and kind of my dad loved the concept of creating a service business where everything was centered around service. And then also having a business with us. I mean, we have a big family, right? And so we're all super, super close. And so he loved the idea of basically creating a way for us to stay way closer than we already were. And so over the 14,
let's focus on that just for a second, just to let the listeners know, because families getting involved in the restaurant business is, it's a wonderful thing, but of course it's not unique by itself. But a family of this size, how many brothers are there together working in there?
So there's seven of us all together, seven brothers, and then six of us that are actively involved on a day-to-day, which makes it really cool and amazing. And it's cool now because now a lot of us have our own kids of our own. So my older brothers have kids that are 19, 20 years old, and they're now working the business. And some of the teenagers now are working the business. And so it's really neat to see. My brother Max and Chez are the first ones that started working it with my mom and dad. And they were 16, 17 at the time. And now we have our nieces and nephews that are 16, 17 working the biz. And so it's... That's pretty cool.
I think that's a record. No, really. I think to start a family business, the moms and dads, and then the next generation, that's something that, you know, we see a lot of. Mm-hmm. But when that next generation is seven, that's unusual. Well, congratulations. Tell us now a little bit about the concept. What's unique about the burgers? How many units do you have? That kind of thing.
Sure. Yeah. So the food that we offer is burgers, fries, salad, and shrimp. The burgers are special to us. We try to bring in a little bit of a Hawaiian flair to it, kind of playing off of us being in Hawaii. And so we have pineapple add-ons that you can add to any of the burgers. The Paniolo burger, which is our most popular burger, we do homemade onion rings. And so we cut, batter all of our own onion rings, and it goes onto this burger that has pineapple, bacon, and has two giant onion rings on it. And then going down the list of food, we really tried to keep the integrity and the quality of the freshness of the food. And so we're really aware of the type of vegetables that are coming in. We work with Sysco. They're our number one vendor in all of our stores in Hawaii and on the mainland. And so we really try to pay attention and be hyper aware of the vegetables that are coming in. The meat, we pride ourselves on fresh meats, no hormones, no antibiotics. We work with Stone Ground Bakery, which they have literally created our own bun specific to us. It's a brioche bun, but with tiny little changes here and there to kind of amplify the sweetness and to make it a little bit more softer. But yeah, I mean, the food has been an ongoing thing where we've never wanted to take away from the quality and the integrity. And there's been vendors that have approached us and be like, dude, if you guys serve frozen patties, like your margins are going to be insane, you know? And so we realize people come to us for the product, for the food. And so we want to make sure that that freshness is in every single bite, the quality is in every bite, and that we're never, ever, ever taking away from the integrity. That's been a big piece.
Absolutely, number one. Absolutely. That's fantastic. So inside seating and outside seating, do you have a drive-through? How does it operate?
It's fast casual. So you order at the counter, seat yourself. We do bring the food to you. Currently going to be opening up our first drive-through in 2 weeks in Pleasant Grove, Utah. So that'll be really exciting. So what we've done is, so the average store is about 2,500 square feet. And as we've grown, that's kind of the footprint that we want. But we are kind of exploring this new concept where we've made the actual restaurant itself smaller, but then added a drive-through. So the drive-through option, leading more customers to the drive-through piece and not so much inside seating. Although we do put such an emphasis on the inside seating experience. And so we don't want to take away from that. And so this is kind of an experimental idea, but we really pride ourselves on the service that we provide and making sure that every customer has this insane out of the box expectation service where we're just meeting every little piece. It's kind of like we really look at Chick-fil-A for a lot of the service aspect. I mean, Chick-fil-A is a juggernaut, right, in the food industry, and we've loved how they've put service kind of at the forefront of everything. And so,
That's a good example. I mean, it's a good standard to go by that so many people have been pleasantly, surprised with how well you can do when you put your mind to it. You can have high volume and you can have, consistent quality and you can have friendly service. And yes, many independents, I think, have seen that anytime we need a reminder, we just look at the big boy in Chick-fil-A. But speaking of big boy, you have obviously grown. If you started 14 years ago, your family got involved. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about how you expanded through Hawaii, and then maybe talk a little bit more about this new unit in Pleasantville, Utah, far from Hawaii. How did that happen?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, 14 years ago, mom and dad opened up the first store in Kahuku. A couple of years later, we had the opportunity to open one up in Laie, which is about, I think it's like 5, 6 miles down the road, super close. Again, in a really small community. And so Laie's got the PCC, the Polynesian Culture Center, which is a massive tourist-driven business. And then it's got the BYU, the Latter-day Saint church school there. And so that's kind of been the backbone of that spot. And then years later, we from that part from that spot, we thought, how would this do on the mainland? And we had so many people asking us, when are you guys going to open on the mainland? And so then we set our sights on Utah. We opened up a truck first. My brother Sterling was living in Arizona at the time, and my brother Max with his wife Mona, they went out to Arizona and opened up a truck to kind of test the market before we went brick and mortar. And Arizona did really well. And they took the truck over to Utah to test that out. And Utah just exploded. Like the reception was absolutely mind blowing. And so we're like, oh, I think we found the spot that we want to open up brick and mortar. And so the first spot we opened up was Saratoga Springs, that being our third location, then Provo shortly after, our fourth location. And we sat on those four locations for a couple of years until we realized, we should really be growing right here in our backyard, on the north shore of Oahu. And so yeah, about 2 years ago, we opened up, or 3 years ago, I think almost, we opened up Shark's Cove, which is a truck, but it does act as a brick and mortar. It doesn't move. And then a couple months after that, we opened up Haleiwa, which then got us six locations. So Haleiwa's been open for about a year and a half. We've had the six stores for about 14 years from the first one. And then we opened up our first franchise this past June. Now the franchise experience has been amazing. We launched the concept of franchising about a year ago, and it was just absolutely incredible the amount of people that are so interested in growing with us and that have so much love for the brand and for the food. And so we're taking our time with it, making sure that we're executing it properly. We met with so many different people that are already in the industry, just making sure that we're making the right moves, the right steps, because there's so many horror stories with franchising, right?
There
And
can be. Yeah, there can be. But now, is this franchise in Hawaii or is it in an, did you open up a new territory with your franchise?
we opened up a new territory. So we launched the franchising concept, opening up Utah, Arizona, and Idaho territories that we were going to be
Okay.
selling in those territories. And so Queen Creek with the Kreider family, Brad and Melissa Kreider, they seem like the perfect fit. Our strategy behind finding the right person was making sure they understand our values and have a love for the brand and see the vision of where we're wanting to go with the brand. And they've done amazing things. They opened up this past June and they've had an incredible amount of success. And it's been such a pleasure working with them.
And I just want to underline a point there for those listening that many, many times I just like the way you easily said it, but it's such a big deal that you found your franchise partner by making sure that you were very careful to select someone that first understood values, understood your passion, and agreed with your mission. Obviously, franchising is a way of growing your brand, adding value. It can expedite growth. Too many times the mistakes that are made are, I think, typically led just on the commercial side of franchising. If somebody's big, experienced, let's do it. Or if somebody's offering, money, they can get financing and open up a territory, let's do it. But you wanted to make sure that they first understood the uniquenesses that drove you. So good for you, and a note for our listeners to make. So now this brings up so many questions. You're in Utah, you've got a company store, but now you're also selling franchises. Idaho's open, Arizona's open. So how did you overcome any particular challenges of going into the mainland with things like product? The particular types of specs, the customized bun, is it all able to be done there too?
Yeah, so a lot of the so in the beginning we were using Hawaiian vendors, but then we moved to the mainland, right? And so then we started getting a lot of our product from the mainland companies. And
Good.
so Stone Ground, the meat company we work with, they're all there local in Utah. And so the idea of them getting out our product to these other places that we're growing in wasn't a big deal. And just by timing wise, Sysco had about 2 years ago, Sysco took over one of the biggest food distribution companies here in Hawaii. And so it allowed us to use Sysco across the board, even in Hawaii, using the same brands, same ingredients, same everything.
Excellent. Excellent. Because obviously that's a concern. You want to make sure that the quality is consistent, the products are the same everywhere you go. Are these units that are franchised, are they pretty much the same style? Are they the same size? Because what I'd like you to do is maybe explain to the listeners how you defined the trade dress, the important pieces of the concept, so that you can maintain identity, even though different places are going to have different inline, different sizes, different, requirements and restrictions when they build.
Gratefully, with the small amount of restaurants that we had already opened, we had already gone into a couple of different sized footprints. And so the Kahuku ones are obviously a little bit different because the weather, I mean, to have outside seating is okay. You know, the weather stays pretty consistent throughout the entire year. Utah is a little bit different because you have snow, and so you can't rely on that outside seating as we do here in Hawaii.
Right.
And so that's been a big determining factor whether or not how much space we want in the dining area or not. But yeah, luckily we've had, I mean, we have the ones here in Oahu that are quite a bit smaller than what we've been able to open up on the mainland for weather purposes. And so, but moving forward, we're still kind of in the explore stage. And I mentioned the Pleasant Grove space is a lot smaller. It's about 1800 square feet. Our smallest one is 18 or 1600 square feet in Laie, but doesn't have a drive-through. And so this one did seem very familiar because we had already worked with a space pretty small,
Good.
but then has the addition of the drive-through, which is very new to us.
And I hope that works out really well for you. Are your menus identical as far as offerings, burgers, sides, shrimp, salads?
Yeah, so all the menus are identical apart from two stores here in Hawaii, our Kahuku and Haleiwa store. They both sell, well, we have a extended seafood option. And so all of the stores sell coconut macadamia nut shrimp, which we make in-house. But the extended seafood option is we have garlic shrimp in Haleiwa and Kahuku, and we have ahi steak, which we did try to do on the mainland. It does create some difficulties as far as keeping it as fresh as we can get it here in Hawaii. I mean, they're literally catching the fish the morning before and bringing it to the store, and we're
Oh
selling
boy.
it. Yeah, it's fresh. So, but yeah, that has been a challenge, and hope that we can kind of get over because the ahi is a big seller here on the island.
And that is interesting too, because that also underlines another trend when independents begin to franchise. And that is, making sure that there is a well-defined core product that, of course, is mandatory, but then being flexible with some optional items that, as long as they're franchisor approved, can be done. You have two units that do some things in Hawaii that work there, but that doesn't mean that they're mandatory for all the other units. That is something that we see beginning to work. And work well.
So you guys have seen success in that with other restaurants where they have a different menus for each one?
Large and small. Some of them will say, and rightly so, that there are certain core menu items that have to be on the regular menu at all times in order to properly represent the brand. But then maybe some regions get to add some seasonal things that might work for them that maybe aren't popular in another region. There are even some American chains here that have, say, a breakfast offering in their counter service that are offered to franchisees as an option, not a core menu item, because if it works for their location, you add it. But if it doesn't necessarily work for the location, they don't have to. So yes, a certain amount of flexibility is working, but I want to underline the fact that there's certain trade dress and certain core elements that obviously must always be on in order to
Sure.
be. But if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to move into a little bit more of the development process of an independent deciding to grow through franchising and the steps that were taken. For some of the people that might think this is something they'd like to consider, could you talk a little bit about the needs, operational organization, the legal process and registration, and about how long did all that take?
Yeah, sure. You know, the process was a massive mountain to climb, and it was definitely something we did with a ton of support. And so the first thing we did is we brought on someone to help us kind of go through this process and these steps.
Okay.
We had a consultant that came on board for 6 months to kind of hold our hand through this so that we weren't making mistakes and wasting money. We had a really good friend that opened up a franchise company. They did really well. They sold a ton of them, but then end up finding a lot of issues and problems with the franchisees, which then ultimately led them closing every single one of their stores. And
Ooh, that's bad.
yeah. And so with that, we really wanted to make sure we took the proper steps that that would get us going, and we weren't losing money, wasting money, and making the wrong turns, because it is expensive. It's really expensive to create an FDD, right? And so
Yes,
first thing, the
that's the
consultant
franchise disclosure document, correct?
franchise disclosure document. So that was our first step that the consultant had guided us to do. So we found the right law firm. We're working with Kirk and McConkey out of Salt Lake City. And they structured the FDD, and they've done thousands of them, right? They've worked with a
Yes.
ton of different companies. And that was a really big bill to flip, So we wanted to make sure we executed on that properly. And then from there, it was really just kind of a look in the mirror internally, just trying to figure out what are some of our own personal inconsistencies across the board, and then going at it with the operations manual, making sure that that was like crystal, and that we ourselves were following it, and adding whatever needed to be added into there.
Good points. Two things. And you're able to do them simultaneously, getting the legal work done, registration, franchise documents, and the operations manual with the detail that was necessary. And it took about 6 months.
I mean, overall, yes, but of course, but as far as us starting to sell, it almost took almost a year to
Okay.
where we actually started. We're like, hey, this is what we're doing. But yeah, it took a really long time, and then we put a lot of time and attention onto the training. We wanted to make sure as people come on board, there's an actual structure and a process to every line of training. And to be honest, it's something that continues to grow and grow and grow as we bring more people on, as we get more feedback from people. And it's going to be something we constantly change. I don't think you can ever have, the perfect form of training. I think it's going to be something that'll always grow. At least that's what we've seen. And as we
Yes.
get more, and as we get more familiar with how people are learning, it's given us an incredible amount of ammunition on how to properly structure it so people are actually learning
Good.
with efficiency.
There is. That's a tremendous point that you made, I think, with regard to operation manual, independent restaurant operators defining how they do what they do at one level, if it's a company-owned store, needs to be taken to another level when you're going to be dealing with franchises. You've experienced it. I've experienced it. And it's mainly because I'm told you're structuring your operations and your staff training, your systems, your accounting, your marketing recommendations, so that they can be enforced by contract. And so that's a big difference. I congratulate you on doing that very well. I also like the fact that you mentioned how the commitment to training, especially when you franchise, has to be a structured program that you start with in the manual, but it has to be continually reviewed and updated. Because that gets me into the next step. What's the difference between, say, franchise field services, how you supervise and support your franchisees, than the way you would work with a company store? Or are there any differences?
Yeah, I think, well, I mean, honestly, we're kind of learning this as we go as well. So what we've done as far as the field service is we've brought on a, we call them a, oh my gosh, the name slipped out of my mind. We basically brought on someone that goes and does these field visits. We call them
Okay.
business specialist, or no, business consultant specialists. And we talked to a couple of different franchisees and how they've got it structured. And we're basically going off of what has led them to a ton of success. And
Yeah.
so we've brought from within, he was a general manager over one of our stores, our Saratoga stores. We've brought him up to this field service representative. We'll go out and basically check on what we believe kind of creates the success lines is these five fives. And these five fives were built off of what my dad created, and it's what we believe is the foundation of our success. And these five fives are constantly measured for accountability and making sure the store is being ran properly. The five fives are food, service, speed, cleanliness, and feeling. We believe that every customer going into any restaurant wants a five-star experience. And so we believe if you're five stars in food, five stars in service, five stars in speed, five stars in cleanliness, you'll create a five-star experience, which ultimately leaves the customer with a feeling that where they say, hey, I feel something at this place, man. This place is tasting really good. The people are super nice. The service is incredible. Which will then obviously lead them to, you know, leaving a good review or putting us on social media or being a lifetime customer.
What a wonderful way to teach the franchisees and tie it to, I'm sure, how you operate your company stores. Because you're right, those are the same five things that everyone, I'm sure, would be concerned with if you're wanting to measure success: food and service, speed of that service, cleanliness, in order to equal that feeling. I also like the point that you made where it's not just satisfying the customer, but it's developing that bond, you know, where that customer's loyal and wants to come back. Because I know that listeners will make note of that. In order to successfully grow, this is not a business of just, you know, entertain somebody one time. They've got a bond. They've got to become a loyal follower and come back, don't they?
Yes, sir. Yeah, they do. I think that's kind of the ultimate goal, right? Is you're bringing them into your fold. You know, you bring them a part of the family. You want to see them after they have kids and they have kids. And it's just an ongoing generation thing where it's like, dude, I was going to say, we have customers even today where they're like, they show so much love and support. It's like, dude, I remember when you guys first opened 14 years ago. It's like, now they're bringing their kids to us.
You really?
Know? Yeah. And it's such a cool little ripple effect.
Are these restaurants lunch and dinner every day? Do you have some that might add a breakfast component or not?
You know, it's funny. When my dad first opened, they had a breakfast piece to it because the lady that had been running the restaurant prior to them had breakfast.
Oh.
And yeah, they my brothers were, my two little brothers were the ones running it. And just based off of them not wanting to wake up as early or, you know, prepping earlier, they took away the breakfast and we just specialized on burgers.
Right.
But I don't know. I mean, you can never say never, right? Breakfast is huge. You know, I think people do really, really well in breakfast. And so it could be something interesting to explore.
Could be, could be. Okay, now we just have to talk about the dynamic of operations, because I'm sure many listeners, some of which are, say, families in business together, are going to want to get the skinny on. How do you grow? How do you assign roles and responsibilities where everyone is getting along? You've got, did you say six brothers currently working in the family? And you've got nieces and nephews. How does it work? How did you find a way to keep, you know, to keep the family gelling?
It's a really, really good question. It's like the number one question I feel.
Hey, I know. What's Thanksgiving like? I mean, I know I owned restaurants, had my brother work with me. We had a really good relationship most of the time, but I'm just trying to multiply that times the amount of family members and how to define roles and responsibilities to support each other without creating some of the friction that happens.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, growing up, we've always been really, really close. And I think that's kind of been our superpower. My mom and dad raised us. We're a Christian family. And so we believe in Jesus Christ. And that's kind of been the center of everything, right? As far as how we conduct business, how we do our stuff outside of business, and how our mom and dad raised us.
Good.
And honestly, we kind of put that as basically the support and keeping us gelling really, really well, as you said it, and making sure that things aren't exploding or going off the handle. But it has been such an interesting experience going from one store and then growing, because I mean, at the beginning, we were pretty much, everyone was pretty much doing everything, you know, from flipping patties to cleaning the floors to serving food. And then as we kind of set our sights on something bigger, and my dad's vision was just like, dude, let's grow, let's grow, let's grow. You know, we all kind of started to fall into these roles that we're now playing now. But before that, even before the roles we're playing now, is we all opened up our own stores, right? And so one of my brother opened up in Saratoga Springs in Utah. I opened up in Provo. My brother opened up Max. He opened up in Sharks Cove. Then Spencer opened up in Haleiwa. And so that's honestly how a lot of the, what would you call it? The piece, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that we all had our own individual goals as far as what we wanted to get done. And it wasn't interfering with anything that we were all wanting to do, right? We all had our own personal goal of, hey, let's open up our own stores. From there, we'll use that as a launch pad to grow and go beyond. And I guess in support of that thought is we've been very goal driven from the beginning. And that comes from my dad. And my dad is the one that kind of creates the vision of where things can go. And he kind of paints the picture, like the 10-year picture down the line. And that's honestly been the conversion piece to this, is making sure that we're all operating and working peacefully, is understanding what that plan is, having trust in him and knowing what that plan is that we can execute. And that kind of being our North Star. I think without that, yeah, there would be quite a bit of friction. And not to say there wasn't, right? Because we all had our own different opinions on how we should grow, where we should grow, what we should do, you know, what do we think is going to do better? But I think it kind of brings back to the core value of the family and how we grew up. You know, we've always kind of brought ourselves back to that, to our beliefs, right? To our Savior, Jesus Christ. And that honestly has brought more peace than anything, because I mean, you know, if you've worked with your family before, I mean, if you have different opinions and you think one thing's going to work and one thing isn't, you know, it could easily get pretty hairy.
Yes, it could. And it's good that you're dodging that. There's so much there that I like. I mean, the faith-based center is obviously a very helpful. I love this dad being directing the vision, and that helps all family members stay focused. If there is one centralized vision, everyone understands their role in it, and then it helps you stay focused. That's kind of what I'm hearing. And boy, if everyone is focused on the same vision, that's going to help, I think, overcome some of the hurdles that otherwise we see in growing companies. Good for you.
Hey, thank you. Yeah, it's been awesome.
How about some of the current struggles that we've seen in most areas of our nation with supplies, with short labor, with cost increasing regarding openings? Did you have to live through a lot of that on the island as well? And how were you able to overcome those these past few years?
Yeah, it was hard. It was really hard. So as far as getting through some of those more difficult times, there was a moment where, you know, we shortened the hours, definitely shortened the staff. I mean, there was a time during that COVID period where we were having one person run the entire restaurant, you know, taking orders. But I think in regards to that, a big piece that we hadn't pushed before prior to those hardships was making sure that we had a well-functioning app where you could order a little bit more conveniently, which we had never had before. And so offering that piece was huge. As far as supply chain, yeah, we did suffer through it a tiny bit, no more than the other person. But luckily with Cisco, you know, we were able to get everything that we needed. And then labor has just been, oh man, it's an ongoing thing. I mean, these past years has been a wave of not having enough people, that we've had to kind of dive into cross training more than we ever have before, and making sure that every employee that's hired on really understands every single responsibility in the restaurant. That way, if they're called upon or if someone doesn't show up, you're pulling from a pool of everybody instead of this small pool of people that are only trained on this specific area. But honestly, I mean, as of recent, the biggest thing has been wages. The wages in Hawaii have just been going through the roof. Minimum wage just went up this year to $14, which, you know, creates a number of problems when operating a small business. And so it then leads us to having to do things that we don't love and is really against our whole, what we believe is we really try to pride ourselves on the price of our food that we sell. And, you know, we've just had the hardest time with, you know, our wrist being twisted with payroll going up so high and the demand of the restaurant that, you know, you're left with having to raise prices or adjust prices. And nobody loves doing that. You know, it always creates some kind of ripple effect of negativity. Luckily, though, you know, we haven't seen a ton of pushback.
That's great.
Such a blessing.
That was going to be my next question. No, that's great to hear. So prices go up, but it sounds like guests are a little more willing to accept that than I bet they would be if they were disappointed in portion or quality or something else.
Yep. And that was a big debate too, whether or not we should, should we take away some of the portions or how we phrase the menu? And honestly, it's still a discussion today, but ultimately we always go back to that centerpiece where it's, we do not want to change the product. And so as long as that product stays consistent, portions, especially, I feel like portions, a big one that customers notice and recognize like almost immediately. And it's a big thing that kind of puts a bad taste in their mouth where it's like, you know, they were really good before they grew, or they're really good when I used to go to them 2 years ago, but now all their portions are junk. But yeah, definitely a narrative that we don't want to be a part of. And so we try to maintain that consistency with the brand.
I would agree. That is a narrative you don't want to go to. I have seen, and maybe this is something you're considering, where some people are rotating menu items based on, say, costs, sort of seasonally adding some of their main items back when the cost or the topping is a little bit more acceptable, and making it more of a seasonal rotation. I've even seen people developing limited time specials where they can utilize a particular product that is more cost advantageous in more ways, sure, as ways of sort of hedging that price increase. But yeah, I wouldn't want any listeners to make a note that they think they could successfully grow a brand by limiting portion, changing quality level. That gets us every time.
Yep. It really does. And it creates such a bad energy going out, you know, because people talk about that stuff. You know, you go to a restaurant and they've changed, and that's like the first thing and it's the easiest way to lose some of your most loyal people, you know?
Well put. Let's talk a little bit about marketing, how marketing, promotion, advertising, is it community involvement? And then also, how is it different between what you've been doing in the small communities of Hawaii and now that you've got company stores and franchises on the mainland?
Yeah. So my dad's philosophy with marketing is word of mouth. He's like, the first person that I want to put my money into marketing is the person that's walking through my doors. And so he's come up with this really cool concept of face-to-face marketing, where every single person that walks through your doors is a billboard, a promo, or someone that can go out into the community and tell everybody else about your brand. And so with the 5 points of the five fives, my brother came up with this idea of 5 points of contact, which you have five different opportunities to touch the customer when they walk through the doors, which also give you five different opportunities. We call it touching tables, touching lives, to touch their table, touch their lives. And so part of the five points of contact, and that third point, we go in and check in on their food. And when we check in on their food, it gives us the opportunity to see how they liked the food, if they didn't like the food, and if they didn't, we get to change the experience. Now, once the experience is changed, or if it's just good all around, we then invite them to share on their social media or on Google to their experience. You know, you say, hey, you know, we're a small business. If you love the food, we'd really love to hear you guys out on Google or on Instagram. And that has been massive for us, huge. And as we grow, this face-to-face marketing is something that we're pushing super, super hard. We stay connected with all of our GMs pretty heavily weekly. And we create different measuring tools of what we're measuring weekly. I mean, outside of their food and their labor, we do a thing where we measure how many five-star reviews they get in that week. And just a month ago, one of the stores broke the record. They had 278 five-star reviews in 7 days.
One unit,
never been done before. And so honestly, this face-to-face marketing has been the biggest part of our marketing strategy. We've never done paid ads. We're obviously on social media, so we do a lot of that for marketing. We have our own content creator team that creates content, produces content, and keeps the social media alive and well. But outside of that, I mean, that's been our main focus. And I think as we grow, you know, there might be opportunities to explore, you know, your more traditional way of marketing. But that's kind of been our backbone of what we believe is kind of taking the word.
I think I'd love to just kind of underline a point there where you mentioned that even in counter service, there are 5 points of contact. And those are opportunities, of course, to make impact on the and develop a positive guest experience. If the third one is checking on the food after they get it, could you give me 1 and 2 and 4 and 5?
Yeah. Yeah. So the first one's aloha. So that's when you basically greet them at the register. The second point of contact is delivery of the food. That's when you're delivering the food to them. Third one, right, is checking in. So we call it a 5-minute check-in. Fourth one is you're bussing their table. So you're clearing up all their trash. And the fifth one is mahalo. And the mahalo, I'll just hit this real quick too, if you don't mind, is we've set the goal for every single shift to have 30 mahalo cards going out to customers, where it's a handwritten note saying how much we are grateful for them to coming and dining with us. And so that mahalo piece is so essential. And it also opens up a door for us to say, hey, thank you guys so much for coming. Here's a mahalo card. On that mahalo card has all of our social medias, and it also has the Google review page to that, the QR code.
Excellent.
To go to Google review. And so it opens up the door to tell them, like, hey, if you guys love the food, man, we'd really appreciate it if you shared it with us on Google and on your socials. And then you have the QR codes there directing them to it.
And see, this is so wonderful to hear, because that is one of the things that others have talked about that is a challenge, is that, you know, if you are counter service, the time with the guest is so limited. And so how do we make that impact? But here you are teaching 5 distinctive steps from a greeting, complimenting the order, making sure the delivery is right, checking on the food, doing the bussing and the cleaning, the special handwritten thank you. So those are 5 very simple steps, but I just think that every listener could probably find a way of adapting those to work within his or her concept.
Sure. No, yeah, no, honestly, that has been so massive. And there's been so many times where we've been able to fix, right, the narrative before they leave, you know, whether they got, you know, they didn't get the right food or the food wasn't done right to their liking. It's been an awesome place for us to kind of fix that prior to them leaving. Because what we've seen is when somebody has a negative experience, they are 100 times more likely to share that than the good one. Like, they want to spread it across every platform, tell the entire world that, dude, 7 brothers smoked me on this, like, da 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 da. But if we can fix that before they leave us, you know, we still have them in our grasp to where we can fix that narrative. That's really our goal, you know, is before they leave, dude, you got to make sure they're leaving with that feeling, that 5-5, that feeling of, dude, I want to go back to 7 Bros.
That's exactly right. I like that. It sounds like you're taking the challenge of maybe a negative experience or something that went wrong, and taking it as a marketing opportunity to correct it and get them to be a loyal bragger before they leave.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, I think we need to look at that maybe more. If there is, for some reason, a minor mistake, whether it's a temperature or maybe even something more major, they didn't get what they ordered. If people do follow your approach, and not take a look at it as a negative complaint as much as a marketing opportunity to solve, then we've got more smiles leaving the door.
Absolutely, 100%.
Well, so much has been going right here. Just as a quick recap, I mean, an unbelievable takeover of a small grill years ago, 14 years ago, turns into the first of what is going to become many family operated, really cool burgers, high quality counter service concept. Move to the mainland from trucks to brick and mortar and from company stores to franchising. This is just a tremendous story of independent hard work and growth paying off. So I guess my next question would be, what's next? What about the North Star vision? Can you share with us what's the remaining 10-year plan for you and the family?
Sure. Yeah. So like we were talking about, we opened up Arizona, Utah, Idaho. And so currently we have 4 franchisee groups that are working with us. As of the year that we started selling, we have 33 units sold. And those 33 units have a scheduled time of opening within the next 6 years. We'll have all six complete. Our five-year vision is continue to grow. We don't really want to put a cap on the amount that we want to do or can do. The idea is just to grow, right? And so we do have specific as far as numbers, but the idea is to continue to sell, continue to grow as well as we can. Find really, really good franchisee operators and people that are just in love and obsessed with the brand and that see our vision, see the goal, see what we're actually doing here. My dad loves to say we're not selling burgers, but we're changing lives, you know? And so it's a very much a people business. And we just happen, you know, we just happen to be selling burgers and really, really good food on the side, right? But but as far as our plans, it's growth. It's growth. It's growth. It's growth. We've got our sights set on just continuing to grow in Utah, Arizona, Idaho, and a part of that 33 deal is Las Vegas too, that I should mention. And then obviously just.
Will that be one of the smaller units with the drive-through, or is that going to be sort of an unusual one built in a center, or maybe, I don't know,
So it's not Las Vegas specific, but it's in that region, I should say. And as of right now, we're exploring that drive-through concept. So we have the Pleasant Grove one and the Harriman one. Harriman will be open in a couple of months here. They're both drive-throughs. And so once those pop, we'll have a better understanding of what our operation can do with the drive-through, which that in alone has been a massive conversation for us internally as a family, just making sure that the quality of the food stays up to par, but then obviously meeting the expectation of, you know, the customer that's in a drive-through and knowing, you know, how long it's going to take. I mean, we cook all of our food fresh, the meat fresh. And so, I mean, that time, you can't really speed up that time. You know, it is what it is. And so the drive-through will be a very interesting case study. But we've done some really cool research on Shake Shack. They just started doing drive-throughs.
I was going to say there are ways. Yes, there are ways, and it may be a little slower, obviously, than say fast food pre-made that is just warmed and wrapped. But I do think that there are ways to increase efficiency and be quick, but not have to divert to just warming and wrapping pre-cooked food. And you mentioned one, and there are other, you know, brands that are say regionally very successful and tout that, you know,
Do
we
you
start to order when you order.
what are some of those brands that you're aware of that you've seen that do a really good job of quality food through drive-through?
There is a burger concept that it's regional in a few states. I believe Arizona is one of the states. I know Texas is one that has a concept called Whataburger.
I've been to one of her.
And yes, and Whataburger is one of those that is known for it's a fast food drive-through. Or of course, there's inside dining, but they are known for being a little bit slower than the other major national brands. But it's because they're not doing, you know, cook ahead, stack them, and just warm them and wrap them. So there might be a couple others, but that's the only one that comes to mind. But I really, really want to compliment you on the story that you shared today, the commitment to quality, the way you were able to get the family involvement and maintain focus, start growth, and then in addition to the growth, manage the distance, Hawaii and mainland. And then in addition to that, do franchising. These are all really big steps. And hats off to you. And we
Thank
really,
you.
really appreciate you sharing your story today. But before we go, tell people how they might be able to find you. If someone would like to learn more about Seven Brothers Burgers, where do they go? Who do they contact?
Yeah, so you got sevenbrothersburgers.com is our website. On our social media, we're Seven Brothers. So Instagram, we're on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, LinkedIn, YouTube. We're on YouTube as
Good.
well. And then if they're wanting to reach out to us personally, our email is thefamily@sevenbrothersburgers.com. Love to hear from you.
There you go. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for spending your time sharing these tidbits of wisdom. Much, much continued success is wished for you. Hey, everybody, check them out. Unless you're living in Utah, Idaho, or Arizona, you may have to wait a little bit before they come to your doorstep. But Seven Brothers coming to you hopefully quite soon. See, thanks again. And for everyone else, we hope that we see you very soon on another Corner Booth.
Thank you for joining us on the Corner Booth. We'll be back next Tuesday with more inspiration, insights, and industry best practices to help you engage your team, delight your guests, and grow your business.